On financial statements, both of them have achieved the unqualified outcome, so they're ticking that box. The one entity that does have a certain sort of challenges is the Department of Women, but we'll come to that on the financial statement aspect. On the performance information, again, the Department of Women, they have some challenges there. And on the labor and on compliance with legislation, you'll find that both of the entities actually have some work to do. This is the slide that will basically cover the entire PC briefing notes, which is slide number 7. And as I go through the slide, I will refer to which specific page I'm talking to in the briefing notes. So if you look at the first, what we call donuts, the round blocks, also the round graphs, we'll see there that the first key focus area is the quality of submitted financial statements. So as I said, that both of the entities receive an unqualified audit report on the financial statements, which is sort of the best outcome. However, you see that CGE is actually in the green, the Department of Women is in the red, meaning that CGE, when they submitted their financial statements to us on the 31st of May, their financial statements were in a state that there were no material adjustments as a result of the audit. So in other words, if we had to give them an opinion at that point in time, the opinion would have been what it is now, it would have been an unqualified opinion. However, Department of Women, there were some corrections that had to be made to the financial statements that were submitted to us between June and July for the set of financial statements to receive the outcome that it had received. So in other words, that if we had to express an opinion on their financial statements on date of submission, it wouldn't have been an unqualified, it would have been qualified or something else, even worse, depending on the materiality of the items. So the briefing note actually talks to what areas were subject to material changes, and I just highlight that. The one was the appropriation statement, the other is the area of current assets, current liabilities, disclosure notes relating to lease commitment and transfer of function. So there were quite a few line items on the financial statements that were subject to material corrections as a result of the audit. So that's basically on the quality of submitted financial statements. Then the next graph is the quality of submitted performance reports. It's page 5 on the briefing notes. There again you see that CGE basically submitted the annual performance report in a state that it fairly or accurately reflected their achievements. However, the Department of Women had to go back and make certain corrections. However, what you see in the briefing note is that there was a complication that arose during the year with the transfer of functions. In other words, the department is not only responsible for the issues related to women, and the other areas that were part of its mandate in terms of children and people with disabilities had been transferred effective the 1st of October 2014 to the Department of Social Development. What that then meant was they should have reported on two annual performance plans. The one up to the date that they're still responsible for those functions, which was up to the 1st of October, to report on its activities that related, including the women and the people with, the women, children, and people with disabilities, and thereafter, with the transfer of functions, and only reporting on what it was responsible for the remainder of the financial year. But what happened was that the department totally did not report on its first annual performance plan, which is related to those other functions that have been transferred to the Department of Social Development. So that was the one issue. And the second issue was that on program 2, there were only 3 indicators. Now, as soon as your exceptions reach a threshold of 20%, then we as auditors, we actually report on that in the audit report. Now, in this case, we have 3 indicators in program 2, one of them not being what we call SMART. I'll define what SMART is. So in other words, 1 out of 3 is 33%. So in other words, we have to actually report that one of those indicators on program 2 was not clearly well defined. And therefore, the target was not SMART, in other words, specific, measurable, achievable, relevant time bound. Basically, the challenge there is that being, if you look at the nature of the department and if you look at the nature of CGE, they are mainly policy and monitoring type of departments. So when it comes to setting your indicators, your objectives and your targets, you want to be very, very specific. Because the type of your work is mainly drafting of reports, tabling of reports, attending meetings, initiating certain discussion forums, etc., etc. So what we as auditors look for is someone not having any knowledge of the department or of the entity. If they have to actually read your annual performance plan, would they know immediately what you are actually meant to do or what you are actually saying you want to do? So in other words, if you look at the indicator, it talks about the report. Now, it's not very specific as to, is it a draft report, is it a final report, what are you going to do with the report, is it to be tabled, is it just to be circulated for public comment, etc., etc. So we had one indicator in program two specifically, and that actually resulted in an audit finding on the quality of the performance report for the department, for the Department of Women. CDE does have certain indicators, but it was really very housekeeping issues, so CDE actually gets a green in that area. And as I mentioned, the compliance with legislation, both entities actually have challenges in that area. The Department of Women, for nine months of the financial year, there was no internal audit function. And there was no director or head of internal audit. In terms of CGE, we had irregular expenditure, as well as we had supply chain management challenges in terms of the entity not complying with the requirements of the various thresholds as required by the supply chain management prescripts. So what we mean there is that they should have actually have gone out on tender, but they actually resorted to quotation, which contravened supply chain management regulations. Department of Women also had some non-compliance, but it didn't lead to a finding in terms of supply chain management because it was below the materiality threshold. However, they did have irregular expenditure as a result of that, but we will discuss that later on in the presentation. In terms of financial health, basically what we're looking at is the profitability of the entities. Are they in a deficit position? Do they have bank overdraft, etc., etc.? So both of them are actually in the green, which is, in other words, their financial management is in order. So there's nothing to report from an audit point of view. Then human resource management is on page 7 of the PC briefing notes. Now, basically, Department of Women, they do have some challenges in terms of vacancies. If you look at the policy of submitted financial statements, which you mentioned that they have material adjustments, the real root cause there is that your finance function is stressed. In other words, you've got a CFO, you've got a director in finance, but that director also performs the role of supply chain management director and management accounting director as well. The other area is obviously the internal audit vacancy, which we mentioned that there wasn't an effective internal audit function three quarter of the financial year. The other area is that senior management did not have performance contracts which were signed. So there's basically a few areas there. And basically when you're appointing staff, you need to go through a process of vetting, of verification of the credentials, etc. And that was not always done in the case of the Department of Women. So those are the issues that were picked up under HR management for the Department of Women. CDE did not have any serious issues. There were just two which we highlighted in the briefing note. The one is the leave accumulation. But I think there are processes now in place to try and limit the accumulation of leave. What was happening was excessive leave was being accumulated, which obviously in the future can result in quite a financial challenge for the entity. And the other is that the finalization of the performance assessment is not aligned to the financial year. So in other words, what we are saying is that you make a provision in your financial statements, but you only pay out that bonus closer to the next financial year, which is not ideal. If your performance appraisal relates to the 14-15 financial year, within 3 or 4 or 5 months you should have that finalized and not wait until the end of the next financial year to actually finalize it and pay it out, etc., etc. But as we're saying that there are no serious issues in the case of CGE. Information technology, again, was on page 7 and 8 of the briefing note. What we'll find there is that I'll just try and give some insight into what we look at when we talk of IT. We basically focus on four broad areas. The one is IT security, where you're looking at viruses, firewalls, networks. So this is basically, is the IT environment susceptible to external attacks? The other is IT governance, which talks to the processes and the controls over where does IT actually sit within the organization? Is there an IT steering committee? Do they have proper documented policies and procedures, etc., etc.? The third is the area of user access management, which is now, as we said, IT security is, are you vulnerable to external attacks? User access management is about internal. In other words, are there proper controls over passwords, the creation of users, disabling of users, giving them proper rights in terms of their functions, etc., etc. And the last area is IT service continuity, which is mainly your backup and disaster recovery. And disaster recovery plan. Now, out of the four broad areas, when it comes to IT security, Department of Women is vulnerable there because they do not have proper antivirus controls, firewalls, and networks. In other words, they are vulnerable to unauthorized external access. IT governance, we didn't have any issues for any of the entities. In terms of user access management, there are some concerns in terms of CGE. So in other words, users may not always be disabled when they leave the organization. So you need to sort of lock them out. And obviously the controls over the creation of users, giving them proper rights in terms of if I'm in an HR function, I shouldn't be able to have rights to a finance role. So the rights should be in line with my position as a whole in the organization. And in terms of IT service continuity, it's a CGE again. We have concerns over the backups and the disaster recovery plan, but the briefing note does give quite a bit of detail in those areas, page 7 and 8 of the briefing note. I think that's in summary. This is probably the most important slide which we've gone through. So I'm not going to go into the briefing note in terms of this, because whatever I've said is contained in the briefing note. The next thing that we just want to focus on is on slide number 9. Basically what you see here is what I've mentioned about the Department of Women in terms of the usefulness. So when we as auditors look at performance information or what we call audit of predetermined objectives, we are basically looking at it from three areas. The one is on compliance. Are you actually complying with the statutory regulations in terms of your quarterly reporting, etc., etc.? Is your annual performance plan authorized by the minister and all those types of things in terms of time frame? The other area is on usefulness. And the third area is reliability. Now, reliability is where you actually report on what you've actually done, and we can verify that when we do our audit. So there we don't have challenges. The concern is on the usefulness, and which I mentioned earlier in terms of Department of Women is relating to the indicators not being clear or unambiguous, and then therefore the targets not being smart. So that's basically a summary of this slide. Then the next slide I want to focus on is slide number 11. This gives a bit more detail in terms of the compliance issues. The quality of financial statements, we've done that. The prevention of unauthorized, irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure. What you'll find there is that although Department of Women did incur irregular expenditure and fruitless and wasteful, it didn't affect the audit report. Whereas in the case of CGE, it actually did affect the audit report because of the materiality of the amount involved. Then management of procurement, so supply chain management, again CGE, and as you mentioned, is a specific thing to do with non-compliance with the thresholds where they should have gone out on tender for specific procurement, and they didn't do that. And the other area is where they should have advertised their request for tenders, at least the government bulletin, and they did not do that. The strategic planning and performance in the Department of Women is specifically to do with your with the transfer of functions issue which we mentioned. HR management, we mentioned about the Department of Women there, to do with the internal audit function, is to do with the with the vacancy and with the performance assessment process. And internal audit and audit committee, again Department of Women specifically to do with the role of internal audit, which was really, you can say, non-existent for the majority of the financial year. Then if you look at slide number 15, it actually gives you some insight into the irregular expenditure for the portfolio. What you can see on a positive note is that year on year, we started off at 8 million in 2012-13, it's now down to just around 4 million. And it gives you an indication of what was identified by the auditors and what was identified by management. Now, what the slide shows is that management is actually identifying the irregular expenditure, which is a good sign. However, the PSMA doesn't just require you to detect irregular, it actually expects you to prevent irregular in the first place. So what the slide shows is that out of 100%, which is 4 million of irregular expenditure, 80% was identified by the entities themselves, and the auditor identified 20%. So as I said, that's a positive in that the department and CGE does have control in terms of detection. However, the prevention is where the focus needs to move. In terms of fruitless expenditure, again, you see from 37,000 in 2012-13 to 1.3 million roughly in 2013-14, and the majority of the 2013-14 was CGE, relating to an outstanding tax matter that they had with SARS, which they then resolved, and then they were liable for interest and penalties. It was an ongoing issue for a number of years, but then they eventually settled, and there was interest and penalties. It was quite substantial that made up the majority of the 1.2 million. And you see this year it's just around the 400,000, and there is only relating to Department of Women. It's to do with the reprinting of annual reports, I think going back about 2 or 3 years, which they settled during this year, and therefore it relates to, or it is reflected in the 14-15 financial year of expenditure. Then on slide number 18, we give some assessments in terms of what we've identified, in terms of the assurance levels that are provided. So if you look at it primarily, you're looking at yellow, which means that some assurance. If the audit outcome is removed positively, it will result in a positive movement in terms of this slide. And you see internal audit units, there's one yellow, one red. The red actually relates to your Department of Women due to the non-functioning of the internal audit unit. And this is another very important slide, slide number 19. And basically what we see there is that whatever I've spoken about in terms of compliance, in terms of vacancies, in terms of performance information, you'll actually pick it up from here, and this actually talks to the briefing note. You see for each of the sections in the briefing note, you have a root cause assessment. And for example, our root cause assessment will say the action plans are ineffective, and you see that it's actually red here. So the briefing note document, if you look at the root causes, you'll be able to link it to how we actually assess in terms of the drivers of key controls. It's in the briefing note, it's on all the sections, from page 4 up to roughly page 8. And it's slide number 19 in the presentation. And all of that, all of the drivers of key control from the previous slide is actually summarized on slide number 20. Where if you have to summarize everything, why are the outcomes not really moving far in terms of the audit outcome? And you see it's specifically to do with the action plan, and it's a reliance on the external audit process to identify and correct material misstatements. So what we're basically saying there is that the entities know what the challenges are. I mean, it's not the first round of audits that they've gone through. So what you need to do is you need to put in an action plan of the findings that were raised in the previous year. But what then tends to happen is that, for example, if you take the area of performance information, we do not audit 100% of all your programs. We select, if you've got four or five programs, you might audit a maximum of two. What you then need to do is whatever findings are identified in those two programs, you need to then ensure that none of the other programs are sitting in the same position. Because next to the auditor, I mean, you know the nature of auditors, they bring in the element of unpredictability. So next year I might select program 1 and 5. And then you didn't take the findings that were identified previously and try and ensure that you address the root cause of the problem rather than just looking at the findings. Because all our findings are on a sample basis. So you need to really, when you develop an action plan, you need to put time frames to it, you need to assign responsibilities to it, and you need to track it on an ongoing basis throughout the year. And what you'll find is that if this is tracked at the highest level of governance within the organization, meaning the exco level and the audit committee level, you'll find that there will be movement. So what you're saying is don't use the action plan tracking just to management level. You need to escalate it to exco and to audit committee in order for there to be some additional pressure on management to try and address what you say the root causes that are giving rise to the audit findings and not just the symptoms of the audit findings. So that's the one area that the response is slow in terms of addressing the root causes relating to the findings. The second is the lack of consequences for poor performance and transgression. What we're saying there is that you'll find, I mean, if you look at a high-level assessment of the figures, you're looking at Department of Women about 180 million. If you take out CGE's transfer of about 70 million, you're then left with 110 million. If you take out another 60 million for salaries, you're left with roughly 50 million. So the Department of Women is basically administering 50 million rand that you are susceptible in terms of risk and from an audit point of view. If you look at CGE, you've got that budget of 70 million. You take out your salaries, which is 46 million, you're left with roughly 26 million to manage. Now, if you look at the amount of irregular expenditure in relation to the fund that you are managing, it's well over 10%. Which is not ideal. And if you look at the nature of procurement, there's no real complex or out of the ordinary type of procurement. Your procurement is mainly a routine. So I think what we are saying is that there should be a culture that is created of not just, we're not saying just blindly complying. In other words, there will be cases where there is something out of the ordinary that happens, etc. You need to deviate, those types of things. But if you really look at the nature of the, of the transgressions or of the deviations, it's things that management knew well in advance. It's things that they could have planned. For example, event management, hosting of agenda summit, etc. It's not something that you are just aware of at the last minute. So what needs to happen is that, especially when there's a repeat transition, there has to be an element of accountability, and we feel that is the only way that you actually going to eradicate this problem of having this tendency of irregular expenditure and not complying with supply chain management principles. Vacancies in key positions, as we mentioned, is to do with the Department of Women. For example, we have given the supply chain management function, the management accounting function. I believe that the internal audit or the head of internal audit was appointed subsequent to the financial year. So maybe that's a positive will already realize now in the next financial year. So these are our recommendations. I did mention this. So the root causes were the slow response in addressing the root causes in terms of action plan, the lack of consequences and the vacancies. And for example, on the action plan, I did mention about tracking by quarterly by the audit committee. And internally, it should be checked at the highest level, whatever it is. It could be an exco level or whatever highest management forum that exists in the organization. Then the poor performance and transgression is the element of accountability. Leadership must ensure that staff who transgress policies and procedures face consequences. What we're saying there is that the entities do have proper policies, procedures, checklists, circulars, etc. But if the compliance with that needs to be enforced, and examples need to be set in terms of if you do transgress and intentionally do it, then there should be some element of accountability. And we mentioned about the vacancies in the key positions. And then on slide number 22, the minister has made certain commitments to address the root causes. You find the minister should have regular interactions with the audit committee, so that is in progress, that is ongoing. Both of them relate to the Department of Women. The other commitment is that this has still not been implemented in terms of the vacancies in HR, internal audit, IT, finance, and in terms of the performance assessment process. I think that's the presentation from our side.
Regular interactions with the audit committee. Whether she also gave any time frames with regard to filling these vacancies and the internal audit control.
Meaning that it is not filled, it's a vacancy. Now, what the department has undertaken was, due to the transfer of functions, was to relook at the skills that are required and to relook at what's required in terms of the organization. However, certain key functions have to be performed, and that is why we specifically focus on the financial element, because whether you've got transfer of functions or whether the requirements in terms of the department has reduced, you still need finance function, you still need an internal audit function. So those key positions must be filled, and if they are still sitting on the establishment, and if it's not filled, then obviously it's a vacancy. If you've identified posts that you have frozen in terms of the transfer of functions, and you are moving them into the new, or you have to scrap them because your mandate has reduced, etc., then that's another issue. So I think the department was slow in terms of filling the vacancies. The reason given was due to the restructuring of the organization because of the transfer of function. But having said that, we still do not feel that, and that is why we are highlighting the issues where, despite the transfer of functions, you still need key resources in those key areas, and that is something that there has to be movement on. So the reason was because of the transfer of functions, and then to do a reassessment of the skills required, etc. But we still feel that having a critical function like an internal audit is a requirement in terms of law. Your audit committee is not able to perform adequately in the absence of an internal audit function, and furthermore, management doesn't get any comfort in terms of the internal control environment in the absence of an internal audit function, because now you are totally reliant on the AG, and it might be too late for you to fix issues if you are dependent on the AG's processes. So that's basically on the vacancies. In terms of the commitments given, there were no specific time frames. It's just an indication that the minister will look at those areas. So in other words, we really cannot comment. I think management, maybe when you do brief the committee, will be in a better position to actually explain our subsequent data, and maybe there has been movement. We do know that I think the director of internal audit was appointed subsequent to year end, so there could have been maybe there was more positive movement in terms of filling of vacancies subsequent to the audit.
Thank you, Chair, and also thank you to the Auditor General. I just want to find out, I think it was Chapter 7 of the Report of Women, where we talk about 33% performance targets on the Program 2, which were not specific. You're saying that 27% of it is specific, but 33% was not specific. I just would like you to elaborate on that. And within the financial statements, I think you've mentioned that they will not have to stand up and they could seek unqualified audit opinion. What measures can we ensure that they're in place, in order to advise, because we have to give a recommendation to the department, and if you can also maybe advise us on that. And also, the performance results due to the transfer program which we said basically the programs that have been transferred, what actually in the next annual report, in the sense what you're saying, that the fact that the department didn't report on the previous plans, the two plans that were approved, what are we supposed to expect from that? Because you're saying that they didn't report on October in terms of the children and women after the state, women and children are we supposed to make a follow up on that, or what should actually happen on that part? And also the fact that you also mentioned that the internal audit was not found to be dysfunctional. In that case, like, what recommendation can you bring in? Because we found ourselves in a situation whereby we actually bring the same concerns over and over and over again. But as the previous member has mentioned, that we actually don't seem to be able to come up with a consensus. We do come up with a consensus, but then actual implementation of our recommendation doesn't seem to be followed up. So I just would like to find out from you, like, you know, if there is any advice that you can actually give us as a policy.
Thank you, Chair, and for your analysis. I have a question that perhaps you can advise us on this as well. We seem to recognize or read in these other reports as well that there are not sufficient skills, and that one needs more skilled people to be appointed or whatever. And yet our top structures are so heavy. The majority of the funding is going to top management, and we don't have people who are actually going to administer. And a lot of money has been spent on training. Now, yes, it's good to train, but I think we should also be delivering. There should be some outcome. So my question is, why are people not being appointed who have capacity so that you don't spend all your money on training? So that you know, have people who are capable of doing the job. Have you got any suggestions on how that problem can be remedied? I'm not sure. That's it. Fine. Thank you.
Uyamhlula ngomnyango. Angazi nomuntu akavunyelwe umaminista ukuthi asho yena qaukuthi lo mnyango yebo ngunikewe ngicabanga ukuthi khona isengizoyenza. Hhayi umchitha kuthi ngishiso ukuthi lapho ziningi izinto ezise uminista kodwa ubona ukuthi uminista yena qobo noma ke leli komiti ngizama ngayo kundlela okusebenza nama-official ngaphambili yena njeakazimisela. Even nokuze telecommunity minister mhlawumbe ukuba ngiyakwazi ukubala uminister akafuni ngisho ukubona ukuthi wakhona ngisho usekela wakhe ngempela mpela angazi ukuthi enhlobono kaminister lo ngiyabonga.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. My concern is about the minister. What I want to say is that seemingly the minister is finding it difficult to control his department because he doesn't even attend our meetings. He doesn't even send his deputy to attend our meetings. So I think he needs to commit himself or herself to this department. Otherwise, again, we are experiencing a serious problem. Thank you.
I wanted to ask, in terms of the supply chain management, it seems to be a problem across government departments. I failed to understand, supply chain management of course gives you guidelines as to how you should go about the process. It's like you've explained to us, if it's above a certain amount, it must go to tender. If it's not above a certain amount, then you can put it out to quotation. Why are departments continuously flouting the regulations or the principles of the supply chain management? It's not only this department, but it seems to be happening across the board. And I wanted to get some input from you on that, please.
Thank you. Honorable Bachet.
I also wanted to ask, in terms of requirements to address by the reallocation of funds, we see a lot of that happening, whereby, as you mentioned earlier, you said, like, you know, the department already, they have a plan for the year, but then you find that there's a lot of reallocation of funds from different programs to the next. That is also an issue that we are sort of concerned about, and we just want to find out what, how can you advise the Congress.
Okay. Thank you.
department on the issues of the employees were appointed without following the proper processes, and for the verification of the claims made in the application that contravenes public service regulation. If they are any response by the department, because on, and also on the law, response by the accounting officer, as we have mentioned here, this is a slow response from them in addressing the root causes that we have given to them, which they must be able to be able to deal with. So that you have any response from the department. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I'll try and answer the questions in the order that they have come. Firstly, on page 32 of the annual report, which is program 2, the specific indicator that we have an issue with is sub-program social empowerment, the last line, institutionalization of gender focal points reviews, report and gender focal points, and then the achievement was not achieved and the draft reports were developed but not finalized. The concern there is that the target is not clear in terms of how many reports are required. What type of reports, I mean, if you look at the deviation, it talks of draft reports. There was no indication as to whether it should be a final report or a draft report. In terms of what is the time frame, is it just one report in terms of, you know, for the entire financial year, is it four reports? So you can keep on asking questions and not be very clear in terms of exactly what, I mean, for example, you do have entities where they talk of report finalized, and we have an issue with that as well in terms of what do you mean by finalized. Do you mean it being on your website? Do you mean tabling it in Parliament? Do you mean sending it off for public comment? So you know, words are very important in an entity or a department that's policy driven or in terms of a monitoring type of a department. Because you're not really delivering tangible services, which then means that your English or the way you come across in terms of what you're actually saying that you want to do, you actually are clear in terms of what you want to do. So that's the issue on the 33%. So you see it's one out of three. There's three indicators there, and that was the one. In terms of the transfer of functions, this has been reported in the Department of Social Development annual performance report. However, the instruction from the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation was that it should have been in the Department of Women's annual performance report as well, and that is the requirement that wasn't complied with, because they were actually responsible for overseeing those functions for that part of the financial year. Having said that, I don't think it would be difficult to actually get the information from the department, because obviously they would have known what they had done with the fund that was allocated to them for that financial year in terms of reporting on the performance of those functions. In terms of the portfolio committee actions, what can be done to assist the portfolio committee? On the briefing note, on the last page, we do have just one line there in terms of what we recommend is on page 13 of the briefing note. I think from a portfolio committee point of view is to monitor the action plan that management gives you in terms of what are they going to do to really address the issues that were raised during this audit. And I think what's also important is not only to look at the external audit findings, but also to look at what internal audit findings are. So that will give the portfolio committee a fairly good sense in terms of what is the control environment like within the organization, what are the compliance levels, and what are the key issues that have been identified by both internal and external audit. And obviously then to interrogate that from basically three areas. Is the action plan specific? In other words, there shouldn't be actions there which talk of a final outcome. If it's going to be something that will involve four or five activities, it should be specific in terms of by October we would have done this, by December we would have done that, and by March we would have ultimately resolved the findings. So that will address three issues. There will be specific actions, there will be a specific time frame, And the third area is there someone at a senior management level who is responsible for the ultimate delivery of that action? So at least then you hold line management responsible for, you know, for delivery of the action. I think that's something that the portfolio committee could look at in terms of assisting the committee in its role. The issue around training, there's two aspects. I will not be able to answer the actual question, but it's two aspects. The one is that a person doesn't have the skills or the competency. So that person needs to be trained to be at least able to do the basic level of work that's required. But I don't think that is the issue, because obviously you've got suitably qualified people in position. The other element of training is, for example, if you look at professionals, they are professionally qualified, they are chartered accountants or they are engineers or whatever their field is. But they also need training to be up to date in terms of what are the latest developments in their area of expertise or in their field. Now, for example, if you look at supply chain management specifically, it is an area that basically on a month-to-month basis, the individuals responsible for supply chain, as an example, they need to, at least on a monthly basis, go and look on National Treasury's website in terms of what are the latest developments, are there any new regulations, are there any new practice notes, etc. There is an important element in that the communication is not always out there. You actually, despite all the technology, you still need to go and look for the information. That is, it's unfortunate. We can claim that we were not aware of certain things or whatever it is, but whoever is the dedicated supply chain manager, I'm using supply chain management as an example because it's relevant here. It applies to other areas. But if you look at supply chain management, as I said, Treasury does not tell you, please bear in mind we've issued a new practice note. Please bear in mind the regulations have changed or whatever. They may tell you things that they want to do in the future, but what exactly happens, there's a new SBG form or whatever, that you need to actually go and look for. And the easiest way of doing that is whoever the dedicated official is, you should go onto Treasury's website, go and look in that section in terms of are there any new developments that I'm not aware of, or is there anything new that I should be aware of, etc. And in that way you'll probably be kept up to date. Training specifically is not going to resolve the issue, because the regulations are clear, they are in plain language, everyone knows exactly what needs to be done. There may be elements where it may be impractical, etc., but those are issues that can be fixed within the department and in conjunction with National Treasury. In terms of flouting the regulations, in some instances, it's genuine. But there we as auditors, we do take that into consideration. For example, if it was a last minute request, it was an emergency, you could never have planned that certain interventions will have to happen, etc. So we do look into that. We look at the memos that are probably signed off by accounting officers, etc. So we are cognizant of that. We are reasonable when it comes to those things. However, there are other instances where you know what the regulation is. The policy is within the entity also actually is clear. There are checklists, there are guidelines within entities. But officials just don't comply with that. It could be a sign of laziness. I don't think it's training specifically that's the issue. Because if it's known and you don't do it, then it's not a training issue. Then it's just an accountability issue that you are either lazy or you're just not taking your work seriously. So you look at that element. The other element that you get at is you may think that as an official, I can justify this in such a way that it will be understood and it will be acceptable to everyone. Now, in that case, you are very susceptible to being found out, because the first question you will ask you was, did you know that this specific event was going to happen? And if you say yes, and if it is in your, for example, in your annual performance plan or whatever, you will immediately tell you knew about this at least a year in advance. But there's no way you can tell us that it was an emergency. What could happen is, you would have planned, you would have done everything, but at the last minute, the venue, for example, is no longer available, or there's some other issue that has come up, then you can motivate for deviation. That's acceptable. Because that's an emergency now. You couldn't foresee, for example, the place that you wanted to have the event in Burndown. Obviously, now it's an emergency. So, as I'm saying, the giveaway is, were you aware of this well in advance? And then, is it an emergency? And is it due to improper planning? And the other very common excuse you get is that this was a sole provider. Now, in today's with all the technology available, I mean, it's very easy for the auditor to Google and just see are there any other entities who could have provided you with the service wherever you wanted to have it, and you'll immediately tell you, well, the sole provider thing doesn't hold, you know. So there are, so you've got to be intelligent in terms of how you manage the supply chain management. You've got to try and follow the rules. If you do not, you have to really justify why you could not, and it must hold water. I mean, it can't be just some flimsy excuse. It could be a flimsy excuse very well written, it doesn't mean it's going to hold. So that's on the vitamin. You are allowed to do vitamins, the PFMA allows you. However, there are restrictions. You, for example, you cannot use your personal expenditure for something else. You cannot use funds earmarked. For example, if funds are earmarked for CDE, now you cannot say, okay, I'm going to transfer 10, instead of 70 million, I'm going to transfer 60 million, and the other 10 million we're going to use it for Department of Women. So there are all those restrictions. You cannot use capital for current, those types of things. All of those rules, we consider them during our audit. So, if there's no issue raised in the audit report in terms of environment rules not being complied with, you can be assured that they have complied with the environment rules. So it is allowed, and there's also an 8% cap in terms of movement of funds, etc., etc. So all of that we do look at in terms of our audit. Then, the way I have it is, I've got one more question to answer. In terms of the checks for the appointment, it's just something that's going to be looked at. Obviously, management has indicated that they'll implement actions to rectify this issue in the next financial year. However, what's important there is that, to be fair also, there are certain checks which are within the control of management. For example, your credit check, your qualification checks, your background checks, reference checks, etc. That's within the control of management. The issue around security vetting, that we do not really focus a lot on that. The reason being is that because of the backlogs at the department that actually handles them. So when we talk of these checks, if the only issue outstanding is the security check, we do not raise it as an issue because it's outside the control of the department. So these are checks that the department should basically have done that are within the control of the department. As you said, the security vetting is something that's completely different. And if you have to wait for that process, you will not be able to fill any vacancies because of the length of time that takes. So therefore, we exclude that from these types of checks. I think it's just something that needs to be checked so that management then actions in this financial year to ensure that there are actions in place to avoid repetition of that type of thing.
Any follow-up questions?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Difficult question to answer from an honest point of view. If you do have performance contract, it becomes difficult. Now, what I'll just give sort of a generic answer. You'll find that a lot of the annual performance plan that entities make mention of an unqualified report. Now, if you achieve an unqualified report, which you have got in this case, and if that is the criteria for you to receive a bonus, then you have achieved that. Now, entities are not too bold in terms of saying that it must be a clean audit. Now, just to guide the committee, I think maybe where the focus needs to move to is not really worrying about, the outcome is important, but if you focus on not having high risk findings in the first place, or not having repetitive findings, you will ultimately achieve that. So I think the performance, this thing needs to move one level below. Rather than worrying about the ultimate outcome, if you hold every line manager responsible for their area of management in terms of not having audit findings, or not having repetitive audit findings, or not having high-risk audit findings, you will ultimately achieve that. So I think what needs to happen is that unqualified audit listing must translate into performance contracts in a way that people are held responsible for not having audit findings in their area of responsibility. That will then ultimately realize that that objective. So it needs to come one level below to the performance contract, rather than worrying about the ultimate audit outcome.
Sorry, just a question of clarity, mainly for the person who worked on this audit. You've made mention in your findings that only senior managers did not sign performance agreements. I wanted to have clarity whether all employees have signed performance agreements, or whether it was only the senior managers. I'm asking this because if you look at performance rewards, there are a number of employees, specifically if you single out the issue of senior managers. One senior manager received a performance bonus of 47,000 for the year under review, which for me, I mean, you cannot be giving out a performance bonus if there was no performance contract. Whether it's only a problem with the senior managers or whether it's actually throughout the department.
What do you think?
Thank you. My question follows on from that as well. I wanted to say, why do we have performance bonuses if people have not performed? Surely it shouldn't just be based on the audit. It should be based on overall performance. I asked this question last year as well, and I was told, oh no, this is according to the contract by which people are appointed. They have to be given performance bonuses. Now I want to question that, because surely performance is for something beyond the call of duty, for outstanding work. Is this something that can be taken under review? How are people appointed and for what purpose? When we are running short of money, how can we put out a large sum like 47,000, which was mentioned by my colleague, if we are not actually delivering to the people on the ground and those whose needs are the greatest?
In terms of performance contracts, there are 25% of senior management that did not have, so it's eight senior managers that did not have, so it's not all of them. Secondly, I think this other issue, I think, needs to be taken up with management, because obviously we do not have an input in terms of what the contracts state, but logically, a performance bonus should be based on performance. So there should be a performance clause in the contract to say that there's no automatic performance bonus. It's dependent on organizational performance, and is also dependent on individual performance. So I think that is so if for example, if the organization ends up in a deficit, despite your performance at an individual level, I mean, if the funds are restricted, the funds are restricted. So you're unable to pay. So there shouldn't be a type of a commitment that's given that irrespective of whatever performance there is, you will be entitled to a bonus. I think that's something that needs to be looked at and not to create that type of a commitment. But it should be entity performance and and individual performance.
Thanks to the Audit General Office. My last question is about whether do you have met with the minister with regards to some of the issues that you have raised with the agency.
I just need to check on that, but I think from what we recall, the last meeting was about a year ago. So there was no meeting, but we can confirm that.
Okay, thank you. Honourable Member, I think some of the questions that you have asked, we are going to ask the department tomorrow. On what happened to some of the issues that have been raised by the AG. Thank you very much for this presentation and also the discussion. And I'll now go to give the opportunity to the DPME. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And the AB is doing X, Y, and Z. And then the minute says, no, it's fine, I'm ready.
I'm from TMG. Yeah.
tomorrow. But today, with DPME is here, we are going to have the presentation now. Over to you, the DPME. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, and thanks again for the opportunity to present you. Just to introduce myself, I'm Henk Terfontein from the Department of Planning and Monitoring Relations. I deal with something called NCRAT, the Management Performance Assessment Tool. So I'll give you a quick sort of brief background understanding what the tool, where we're from and what we're trying to achieve, and and share with you our assessment of the department and take it from there. So MPAT is the assessment tool which we started in 2010, and it was basically after, you know, I think we all realized that we need to have a capable state and a capable local government for us to be able to deliver on our developmental goals. So impact itself does not assess, we don't assess the, let's call it the outcomes and the results of the department. We only assess whether they comply and conform to what we would say is generally accepted good management practices as the enabler for us to deliver on the overall goals. We do, however, from time to time, just try and assess whether there's some correlations between having good management practices in place and delivering on your annual targets. And we are picking up these correlations. And also we have found, you know, a lot of the service delivery failures, we can always, not always, but in a lot of times, draw back to failure in administration. So if we look at the textbook target, the ARV supplies and all of those things, you can actually draw it back to administration. So yes, so in fact, we only look at administration management practices, those types of things. But we're saying it's a necessity, it's an enabler, you have to have it in place to actually deliver at the end of the day. So we've worked with Treasury and DPSA and AG and all those in conceptualizing it. We've just submitted, well, it came from Cabinet now, so we just submitted our evaluation report. So we evaluated impact to the implementation evaluation. So we're not perfect yet, so, you know, there's a few things that we want to see. But I think the one good positive for us, at least we've had 100% compliance participation to the impact system process. So it does seem departments are using it and seeing it. We see different performance. Some departments are improving and some are not. So I'll show you the pictures now. So in fact, we look at four different key performance areas. So the first one is strategic management, governance accountability, human resource management, and financial management. So this evaluation said we probably should expand and look into governance of ICT, management of data and manage information security and all those issues as well as asset management and those things. And then MPAT is based predominantly on the Public Service Act and the PFMA and our departments comply to that. Just to give you a quick understanding, you'll see now when I show you the scorecard, the scores will range from 1 to 4. And where 1 is, for us is 1 is where, or let me first, we set standards every year. And we say these are the standards that are required that department should adhere to. And then, so level 1 is basically that our assessment is that there's no real awareness of what they're supposed to do, because there's no evidence that we can find that the department is doing anything on the matter. So we do find it a lot when we introduce new measures that there's not always good awareness out there and people don't know what they're supposed to do. So that's level 2 is for us, where we at least can start seeing some evidence of them working towards compliance. So yes, there's some drafts in there. So we get a sense that the department is understanding what they're supposed to do. They're not necessarily doing it yet, but they're working towards. So at least they got that. But level three is where they comply to the requirement set. So, and this can unfortunately still be malicious compliance. So they go through, they do the paperwork and all those type of things. But at least they're complying to those requirements. Level four is where we start looking for evidence where we can see that the management within a department are actually using the compliance. They're using the plan to manage the delivery in the department. They're using progress reports to unblock blockages and those type of things. There we sort of phrase it as working smartly. So these days, they're using the compliance information to manage the department and that. So yes, for us, the minimum is four, so we need everybody to be at level four. We also do, the scorecard will show you trends over time. So yes, we do increase the standards from year to year. And we're saying impact for us is a developmental tool. We want to instill a culture of continuous learning and improvement. So therefore, we will raise the bar from year to year. And things will change. So sometimes, you know, the regression would be because we introduce new standards and they don't comply to those standards. So somebody that did the same from 1 year to the next year, score could move from a 4 to a 2 because we've introduced new standards. So just you keep that in mind. But I think we are seeing quite a big, overall there's improvement in the standard. So there's some good positive progress. So also our final scores, which I'll share with you now, is based on a fairly long process. So yes, departments do a self-assessment, then we do moderation of their scores. We then give the moderator scores back to the department. They have opportunity to challenge us and you know, for us to come up with the final set of scores. Final scores went through cabinet about a month ago or so. And I think we will publish it. I'm not sure, we're trying to publish next week. We're working on sort of all those logistics to publish the results. So this is just, and apologies, it seems to be quite small. But this is our what we call the logic of the impact model. Firstly, yes, like I said, we're assessing management practices. And basically, in this little step here, is where we get departments to assess their own situation. So the self-assessment for us is very critical. I think we ascribe to the AA policy as well. I'm saying first department needs to admit they have a problem. And then they would hopefully address the problem. So for us, the self-assessment is quite important. And so we compel departments to go through a self-assessment process, and we've just finished the 2015 self-assessment. So, and for us then, from the self-assessment, we then analyze and identify weaknesses as well as good practice and what works, what doesn't work. So we then require departments to, based on their self-assessment, if they acknowledge that they've got a problem in certain areas, so I think internal audit came up in the AG report, that comes up in our report as well, then we would require the department to come up with initiatives on how they're going to improve that situation and rectify the situation. But we also identify good practice, and we're glad to say that each and every standard that's measured through us, there are departments that are at level four. So it's all possible, it's all achievable, and we've done quite a lot of case studies and those things to show and demonstrate how you can actually do it. So then based on the learnings and all those things, we then require the departments to come up with improvement plans, and then hopefully the implementation of these improvement initiatives would then come up, will improve management practices for us, which will improve management performance. And like we say, our logic says that if you're managing a department well, you will deliver your services well, and ultimately we all offer a better life for all. So that's how we sort of see the tool and that. And I suppose this is probably why you wanted us. These are the scores for the Department of Women. Just to remind you, these were the assessments done. This is the situation at 30 September of 2014. So that's current position. We don't, like the Auditor General, audit financial years. We take a snapshot and say, what do you look like on 30 September 2014? So I do hope and I assume the department would have come up with quite a few actions and interventions on how to fix these things. But just to run you through sort of the scores and how to interpret it. So obviously we have the 3 years. So we have the three years that we've done the assessment, 2012, 13, 14. This column will show you just what the movement from 13 to 14 assessment. So in the case of APP, the department has actually increased their score, so they've gone up to a level 3. Strathlands has stayed the same. Then, here we've got the average score for the public service, what the average score in that standard across the 155 national and provincial departments. And then we just give you some indication of whether the department is above or below the national average. Because some of the standards are quite weak across the whole public service. So again, we're seeing some things are a generic problem, but some things are specific to the department. Sorry, I think, I don't know, that's meant to be green, that, and so it comes up from the colors. But, okay, so within strategic management, yes, strategic plan, the department has plans, they've got it in place and that. But if you look at, for us, you know, the scores from strategic planning to the annual performance planning and then to M&E, we have a general problem and a trend in the public service. We have beautiful plans, but we're not necessarily turning our plans into implementation and then monitoring evaluation is about assessing progress against those plans. And yet, life doesn't always happen as planned, so we're requiring departments to look at the annual progress, quarterly progress report against the plan, and then start coming up with interventions and whatever to unblock where we're not meeting our plan. So again, on annual performance planning, so yes, they've improved, but you know, they were already a 3 in 2012, and again, like you said, remember, we do change the standards, but so the department is doing it, but we're not necessarily seeing that they're using the plan, engaging with the plan at the management meetings, understanding where's our problems, where are, and how do we unblock it. And then M&E is a lot about, you know, how do we assess, and I think the Auditor General also pointed out to indicate how do we obtain the evidence and do we verify the evidence that are used to sort of claim progress and those things against that. So I do have further slides that gives a little bit more detail and why this department is not needed. Service delivery improvement planning is quite a weak area in the public service. We do have the service delivery improvement planning. We do unfortunately have some perception out there that if I don't deliver service to citizens, that I then don't need to abide by these rules and abide by these planning, the policies and the framework. But for us, it's crucial saying all departments deliver service, whether it's to the public or whether it's to other departments, other public service, you know, they should do it. So it's the area of concern, and I think, you know, we would recommend the department seriously look into this one. Management structures, the department does seem to have a problem with their management structures in previous years. So from our assessment, at least the management structures are functioning, they're meeting as required and those things. So from where we're sitting, it's the area of which is not too bad, or which is good. Audit committee, they seem to have a audit committee that's functioning. For us, level four, when we assess audit committee, it's again about back to management. How is management interacting and reacting to the audit committee reports and those type of things? Are they taking up action? So I think for us, that's the next level where we want the departments to go to. Ethics is a lot driven from your financial declaration, whether all managers do submit it, and unfortunately not all managers just submit their financial disclosures, as well as ethics is also about how the department responds to the queries from the National Anti-Corruption Hotline. I think there's an outstanding query from the hotline sitting there. So, yeah, fraud prevention is about your whistleblowing policy, is about do we have fraud prevention strategies and those things in place. So on sitting at level two, it would imply that the department don't have all the appropriate policies and reports in place. So they're still working towards compliance. Internal audit, we are saying, are not a functional unit, and I think it seems from the AG's report it's similar to that one. Risk management, again, we're seeing the department have the appropriate policies and those things in place, but again, level four is about, are we using the plans and the reports and those things to really manage our department? We are finding across the public service as well that we're not necessarily integrating risk management into our normal monitoring, evaluation, annual performance, APP sort of planning and those things. We tend to do risk management separate. It's not part of our normal management of performance in there. FAIA, which is the Access to Information Act, it's you'll see it's a new requirement we put into MPAT in 2013. It's been an old policy. So again, the departments are not compliant to those requirements about having information officers, deputy information officers, and then there's certain reports that the department needs to provide. Human resource management also is generally a very weak area in the whole of the public service. I think what we found in the human resource planning, unfortunately the department gave us previous year's plan, so we obviously could not give them any benefit for previous year's plan. So we from our point of view, we're not sure whether they don't have updated plans, human resource plans or not. So that's where that statement comes from. The organizational design is that in the department are going through construction, some laser structure in place, approved structure in place. HR planning or human resource development, the HRD planning is also an area of concern. Recruitment attention, again, we've seen the department not necessarily using using the results of the climate surveys, or the department don't have a climate survey, they are doing excellent reviews to try and understand why are people leaving the department. But for level four, we do require the department to come up with an assessment of the environment in the department to proactively address, you know, some of the things that you know, that sort of make the employees unhappy, and would result in them seeking other employment. So that diversity management, obviously for the Department of Women, is quite a thing close to their mandate. Web teams, they are not reporting to DPSA. Just to keep in mind, the Department of Public Service and Administration is responsible to oversee diversity management within the public service. So the whole employment of women in senior management and that is overseen by DPSA in the public service. So Department of Women has to report to them. And for us, diversity is not just about the numbers, but it's about dealing with the perceptions and how do we change perceptions of certain groups regarding other groups. And that's the one report that were not submitted. So as far as we're concerned, there's no activities within the department to deal with perceptions within the department, different groups. Wellness, the department does seem to be doing fairly well. Delegations with regard to the Public Service Act. What DPSA has issued new directives on delegations, and what they basically require, the spirit of the delegation, is to require first the executive to delegate to the HOD or the DG, and then the DG is to delegate to the rest of the department. And to delegate to appropriate level, where, you know, to enable, empower people to perform their function. So the only evidence we got is there was a delegation from the executive to the DG, but there's no delegations further down. So, and the guideline says that, you know, you would want to see the DG being responsible for appointment of people at level 13 and 14. Minister is responsible for 15 and 16. And then DG should delegate down the appointment of people below the senior management to the head of corporate service or somewhere. So that we don't get bogged down into getting decisions. So empowering people to do. So that's the spirit of the new framework, and that we're not seeing that the department is implementing the delegation. The PMDS performance management system, I just hear some debate about that. So I think what we are seeing is those. Firstly, just to mention, the performance management system for levels 1 to 12, each department approves their own policy, and then we assess whether they're implementing against their policy. So clearly, the department has missed some of their own policy requirements about finalizing the assessment on time if your policy requires performance agreement at that level, whether that happens. The senior management performance management system is definitely a concern. So it is also about have all senior managers sign performance agreements. If they have not, we will still give the department the benefit if they at least have taken disciplinary action against those ones that did not sign. We do the same, actually, I should have mentioned it, when it comes to financial disclosure, saying we will give the department level 3 if they at least have disciplinarily acted against those employees that don't submit their financial disclosures on time. Because we do understand some people reasons won't do it, but at least there should be consequences and those things for it. Also, on the head of the department, we've only have evidence of that the department, the DG does have a performance agreement, but there was no verification phase and no assessment done of the performance of the DG. So that's that one. Then on demand management, acquisition management, the department seems to be at level 3, which is probably logistics management is the one also a problem area. And we do have the tendency about also, you know, departments like the Department of Women, which don't keep stock and all those things, that we don't find any policies or nothing on how are they managing stock. So sometimes the response from departments would be, but I don't keep stock. I have a just-in-time policy. So if I need something, I go buy it and get it. So our point is, even if that's the case, we just need you to define and approve that your procedure, that your policy, that's how you operate, that you don't necessarily keep stock. Disposal management, cash flow management seems to be good. And cash flow, the department that seems to have quite a bit of improvement. Payment of suppliers, that's where we assess the 30-day, whether they place suppliers within 30 days. And it also seems the department, I think why are they also on a level 2, is they're not providing the report to Treasury, who are overseeing these payments of suppliers. So sometimes we have an issue where people say, well, I have not defaulted any payment. So I think the message is that even if you've got a null report, you have to submit it. That Treasury and ultimately FOSAT monitors the payment of suppliers, that we all know exactly what the situation. The next one is about the procedures and practices they have in place to avoid and unauthorized, irregular and wasteful expenditure. So we couldn't find any evidence that the department has the necessary procedures in place to do that. payment of payroll certification. That's a process where on a monthly basis each department, each manager has to certify whether we're paying the appropriate people, and there's no ghost in our system. So the department also does seem to fail in on a monthly basis assess and certify whether we're paying the appropriate people. Delegations of PFMA, it does seem there's some delegations from the DG to the rest of the public service on PFMA matters. Then I think I have touched on quite a few of these ones, but so this is a list of scores that we downgraded because we couldn't find the appropriate evidence to support it. So for us, I think our interpretation is if there's no evidence, it didn't happen. So we have given the department maybe a few opportunities to provide us with the evidence. So I think I'll just members can have a look at those lists, but I think so that is our take and understanding of where the department is at. So again, I think our recommendations is that the department should come up with initiatives. And just to mention, we're not asking the department to come up with a separate plan for impact improvement. We're saying there's lots of mechanisms and plans already available, so the department should just come up with initiatives and capture it in the appropriate plan on how they're going to address and fix these shortcomings. We also working and continuously trying to provide support to the departments on how they can improve and go forward. And then yes, as DPME, we're not just assessing the performance of the departments, we also assess the policies as well. So we do acknowledge that sometimes the policies is the problem, and I think we're initiating our whole policy review process. Thank you.
Abantu besifazane nje But you know, now we are presenting a 2014 assessment, which of course is not assisting assess members of parliament, because what we are presenting to you is just different to what we are receiving in the annual report. Just for example, you know, what you have assessed in your report, you are saying the risk management is good now in terms of your assessment, but in terms of the annual report, it's not effective. In terms of the present annual report, so I'm saying, how best can you say, maybe because we know that annual reports are presented between September and October, how best can you present, maybe before, prior to September, the planning and monitoring present their assessment so that you can be able to guide us, even as a portfolio committee or even two departments, just to give us advice prior to the tabling of the annual report. You know, we should not seem to work in silence. So that report now is going to assist us, it's not going to assist us. Or maybe it's our timing as a portfolio committee, We were supposed to call you as the Department of Monitoring prior to the tabling of the annual report, but I don't think it's not going to assist us because you want the latest, you know, the latest assessment.
Found this very strong correlation about
the performance of the department overall versus their performance on the diversity side. And we did find that once the department is good at diversity, management of diversity, they seem to be good at everything else. And for us, we try to understand this. And for us, it's about the culture within the department. Yes, to employ somebody with disability takes a little bit of extra effort. So yes, you've got to come up with some tools and some enablers, and might cost you a little bit more money as well to do it. But then it's about the culture within the department. Do they have the culture to go the extra mile and put that in? And we're seeing if that's the culture in managing diversity, you know, that it will permeate throughout the whole how the department does the work. Everything we do in the public service, not everything is plain sailing. So yes, sometimes you would require some extra effort in that. But so, and I think for us it's why we put the standard in for perceptions, that we start breaking down perceptions and different perceptions from different groups. I think that is unfortunately still around. So we can ask the question whether there's real commitment sometimes always to appoint and accommodate people with disabilities and women in senior management. So that's why we put that in. So I probably don't have an answer exactly why it's not happening. But it's something we've been raising with DGSA, who's the owner, policy owner, and we've also put it through to cabinet that we're not meeting, getting close to our target in those things. I think maybe it's the way I present it, but I don't think we're saying things are good in the department. I think, you know, for us, if you look at the scores, level 1 and 2 is totally unacceptable. And if a department are sitting, if we just look at that one slide, within governance, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. More than about 50% of the standards, the department don't meet at least the level 3. We're saying level 3 is acceptable, but yes, 4 is what we need to get to. So I think that's one. Just maybe, yeah, I think we should look at our timing and when we present which findings. The departments do the self-assessment in September every year. So we obviously, because it's department self-assessment, I'm not at liberty to provide that to anybody else, because we first go through our moderation process in trying to come up with real targets. But I would recommend that you can ask the department, you know, so even if you engage with the department tomorrow, it's asking what was the current self-assessment on the scores. So the departments will have their own scores for the 2015 year. So our normal process, round about after we've done moderation and gone through the challenge period, we normally in about March, April of the year, we would have the final scores done, sealed for that, let's call it the September assessment. So I think we can, you know, from then on start engaging and find processes for us to give you more recent stuff. I think it's that one, yeah. And I remember, yes, we do try and engage on various aspects on what is causing people not to comply. And I think where we're picking up is in some places, yes, maybe the policy is very difficult to comply with. We try and resolve some of the policy issues. Like I said in my opening, in each and every standard, there are departments that are operating at level 4. So sometimes we're saying, we haven't heard good excuses why not.
Tina. So it's about commitment, it's about putting you know, discipline and just doing what you're supposed to do. So yes, we try and engage and understand exactly what the challenges and how to resolve it and those things. Yes, in our engagements with departments, we would sort of give them their assessments. We would indicate to them why we don't think they make specific standards, and then they have the opportunity to come back to us. So we have some engagements with departments to try and understand where this comes from. The whole planning process and the fact that we go to hotels to do all our plans, I think we also say we're seeing this whole administration, the management and all these things to be a bit of a iterative process and a continuous learning process. So yes, I think I also said in the beginning, we're not always seeing the plans of being turned into implementation and actually used as management tools. But for us, it's good to see at least we're getting plans. So we at least got step one done, and then we will evolve and start focusing on further issues. But yes, I don't always believe that our plans are really management tools, and we get value out of going to the hotels for 3 days or 5 days or whatever for plans. I can't sort of comment on the department itself. Madam Chair, our time frames for assistance, we actually have continuously sort of through the years continuously provide assistance. So we have learning networks and events where we share, and us and GPSA and Treasury trying to share with people good practices and how to actually fix it. But we've just put through GNA cluster our whole program, which will hopefully kick off next month, to then select a few of the challenging departments, the ones that are continuously not performing well in relation to the rest of the public service, and then have a more intense sort of support program for them. So I'm not sure whether the Department of Women would be one of those key departments that we can look into whether we will, because even though things are not good in the Department of Women, they're probably not as bad as some other departments. And then we have to look at our capacity as well. And we also look at commercial departments as well. But we can definitely look at those. So in specific areas, we have support programs around how to deal with delegations and those type of things, and risk management and whatever. And then maybe on this finding of us where it says no evidence was uploaded, like I did mention, if we're saying there's no evidence, we're basically saying the department was supposed to provide us with evidence that they are doing certain things and have certain things in place. So the understanding, and we've, like I said, given them about at least two opportunities to provide the evidence. So for us, it's probably a diplomatic way to say it's not done. So if the department, and the department's responsibility to provide us with the evidence, and if they can't provide it for us, then we basically assume that work has not been done. Thank you. Yeah.
Yes, thank you for this. My question is, have you ever listed the departments according to their performance?
And if so, how do you compare this department with other departments? And also on the issue of people with disabilities, as we have said, every department should have met the target, but now it seems as if all departments have not met their target on the employment of people with disabilities. This is due to the reasonable accommodation, as we have mentioned. And so what do the departments do to assist? So that means the departments should have budget for that. That will assist them to do so. And for the national treasure, to make sure that those budgets are reinvented to do what they are supposed to do to meet the target of employment of people. Do you have any idea or any advice to the national treasure to make sure that there are funds available for the department to make sure that people with disabilities are employed? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, Chair, we do list departments and we do rank departments. I apologize, I don't know the current rank. I can't remember where the department is. But if we have to make a guess, I think it's probably in the bottom half of the rest of the public. I just don't have it with me. Apologies. But I can send it forward. I can afford it. Where they listed it. The 2014 listing. And which quartile they'll be sitting, first, second, third, or fourth. So I'll get that to the committee. I can shift it off to that. I can definitely do that. Yes, I think, I mean, the department, DPSA, Department of Public Service Administration, came up with some frameworks and requirements for departments to ensure reasonable and access. I'm just trying to remember the policy, but there is an access policy on how do we in the public service ensure that we have the capabilities, the budget, and the fundings of those things. To actually facilitate the employment of people with disabilities. So, actually, I don't always think it's just the money. I sometimes think that, you know, again, it's the scotch and this willingness and that to actually do it. Because I think in the much bigger picture, I don't think it should be that much money. So I do believe it's about the culture and that we should drive. But I think we can always consider looking to adding whether there's appropriate budget within the department, and then start sensitizing and make sure the department provides for those budgets.
My last question is around the improvement of this useful information. Do you ever thought of doing this on social media?
Madam Chair, I don't think we've ever considered quarterly basis, but I think it's about capacity for us to perform it. But what we have definitely seen is I know we have an example of the Eastern Cape Premier's office. They were, I think, from 12 to 13, they were our most improved department. And what we did find is they develop the whole improvement plan, and there's executive EXCO management meeting set on a quarterly basis to actually track progress against these. So again, I would say from our point of view, it's important that the department run and track these improvements on itself. Just to mention something else we're tracking is what we call the FOSAT plan. It's a plan with about 40 odd indicators, and those indicators are tracked on a quarterly basis. So it's sort of, let's call it some performance type of information. It would be issues about the 30-day payments, the period they use to fill vacancies and those things. So we are tracking those type of things on a quarterly basis, and trying to unblock where there's blockages. But I think the impact assessment we only do once a year. I think we're saying we're not so much tracking improvement plans and implementation thereof. We would, on an annual basis, track the improvement and see whether the improvement actually has materialized or not.
around the issue of evaluating and monitoring the department. But on the issue of oversight, as members of parliament, we are doing oversight. From there, we come and report to parliament because we take those issues that we came across while we are doing oversight to the department, which is the Department of Women and all other departments. Then from there, when we're taking those issues to the department, we are waiting for the department to respond to those issues. Thereafter, we go back to those communities and report to them around the issues that we have came across during the oversight. So the oversight is being reported and the reports are being sent to parliament and the department, not to the community. Honorable and second. Thank you.
Thank you very much. To the DPME, you know, Parliament is in a process now of reviewing the process of what is here as the budget review and recommendations report. And I think, to me, your impact assessment can contribute positively towards reviewing the budgets of different departments or of our departments. So what I'm trying to say is that the timing for your assessment, to me, is wrong actually. Because what we want now is the recent assessment, as in your 2014-2015. The general question was, why can't you align your assessment with our program as parliament? That's basically my question. Because to me, this report is not assisting me. I want the recent one, so that we can be able to, identify challenges and make sure that these are part of our recommendations in terms of the budget review.
Thanks, members. I'm not aware of the oversight, but I think maybe it could be oversight reported that we are, as a department, getting it. And we do have a unit for frontline service delivery monitoring that goes out and monitors frontline services, but maybe it's not a bad idea if we can get the oversight report to just reflect on what the issues identified and those things as a department. So I'm not aware of that we're getting any one of those things. Again, on the non-performance to any of these measures and like delegations and all those things, we as the DPME have got no authority to charge anybody. The current disciplinary process, she just requires only somebody within the department can charge that. So it could only be the minister or the MEC can charge the specific sort of person. But, you know, our strategy is to highlight these things. So again, we would, like today, we do pronounce on the lack of delegations within the department, and then we would also rely on the portfolio committees to assert the necessary presence and give attention to get the departments to give attention to it. So I think our strategy is to just, let's call it, alert the staff, to put it out there, and then let's find ways of addressing it. And yes, we do provide support and try to clarify to people what the intent of the policies and those things are. Honourable Member, yes, I think we will have a re-look because we are in the process of reviewing and revising or we finished reviewing our process, our timing and all those things. Just to share with you why we do it actually at that time. Our initial thinking was to then allow the departments, because majority of departments are now going into their plans for the following year.
majority of departments are doing their strategic planning session.
Mm-hmm.
They are developing their first draft, second draft, ATPs now.
Mm-hmm.
And for us, why we thought this is a good time is to serve as the current, to analyze the current situation, the status quo. Say, what am I good at, what am I bad at? And then try and get this process to feed into their plans for the coming year. But I think we can look at how do we change our times to assist Parliament as well. Yeah. Yeah. I think we can definitely look into that.
Okay,
members,
any other questions?
Thank you so much to the CME. Thank you for the presentation. I think what we have asked for today, on when we are coming back on the other side, we hope that there will be some other findings, maybe better than this. So I would like to thank you, honorable members, for this meeting. And say that tomorrow we are having a meeting. Starting at 9:30 at the room 2, 9th Plain Street. We are going to meet the FFC and the department and CGE tomorrow.